pediatrician Karen Soren, MD, FAAP, is Director of Adolescent Medicine and Associate Clinical Professor of Pediatrics and Public Health at Columbia University Medical Center in New York. Doctor, studies show that 1 in 5 children has a mental health disorder. Does that include children with official diagnosis as well as ones who have not been diagnosed?
We do know that more children have mental health disorders than previously thought, although the percentages vary depending on how you define mental health problems and which study you're using. The 1 in 5 includes patients who have some degree of impairment, although not necessarily severe impairment. And a recent October 2010 study showed that adolescents ages 13 to 18, in that group, 20% of teens suffered from a mental health disorder that caused some kind of impairment or distress. And of those, anxiety disorders were the most common. Next came behavioral disorders, followed by mood disorders, which included depression, and substance use disorders came next. And of course, eating disorders are not uncommon, especially as teenagers get older. And importantly, the mood disorders account for a majority of adolescent suicides.
Are some children at higher risk?
Yes. We do know that certain mental health disorders have a genetic component and that they do tend to run in families, so that youth with positive family histories of mental health problems certainly are more vulnerable. We also know that adverse life events and trauma can precipitate mental health problems, especially in predisposed youth. And additionally, there are many reasons why mental health disorders seem to present in adolescence. There is the genetic risk. What also happens is the hormonal changes of puberty seem to trigger some problems. Sleep disturbances certainly can precipitate mental health problems. And then we know that the psychosocial pressures that accompany adolescence, such as identity, sexuality, and school underachievement issues, can precipitate mental health disorders as well.
How does anxiety or depression manifest itself in adolescence? Can you give some examples, and how should parents handle these situations?
That's tricky. There are some very typical manifestations of depression in teens that I think most of us would be aware of, and those include mood and behavioral changes, such as sadness or tearfulness, hopelessness, inability to concentrate, when kids have a loss of energy, when their sleep is disturbed. Often these kids tend to have a lot of self-criticism and very low self-esteem. And of course, when kids have suicidal crises, these are pretty typical manifestations of depression in teens. But I think there are a whole bunch of manifestations that are a little bit more subtle. And these are withdrawal from family and social activities, irritability, like fights and moodiness, school underachievement, truancy, failure there, and substance use and abuse, because often kids will use illegal substances to self-medicate for feelings of depression or anxiety. And then, of course, the frequent aches and pains and somatic symptoms that a lot of our pediatricians see that really have no clear medical cause. I mean, for example, I treated an adolescent boy recently who complained of persistent dizziness and had seen multiple specialists, had many radiological tests, and it turned out that he had an anxiety disorder and was just very fearful about leaving his house. Or another example is another patient of mine was recently brought in by her mom, and her mom complained that she was lazy. She would just stay in her room and would not help with chores. And after some short investigation, she admitted to a recent relationship breakup that had precipitated a deep depression, and that withdrawal from her family was how she manifested this. So what can parents do? Parents should notice if their child is irritable or withdrawn, and they should try to open a dialogue with that child. But they have to be careful not to be judgmental. They have to listen. Don't minimize the child's feelings. And I think this is something we all fall into, a bad trap of trying to solve the problem. I don't think the kids necessarily want the parent to solve the problem. They want the parent to listen and understand and to acknowledge the feeling, validate it, and then afterwards ask how you can help. And, of course, making an appointment with a pediatrician to discuss can be very helpful for the parent.
You brought up anxiety. A lot of kids are fearful or anxious at particular times. What type of behavior constitutes an anxiety disorder?
Well, it can be challenging to detect if a child has a serious anxiety disorder, as many, many children are anxious about a lot of things, often from childhood on, and there may be an overlap with many somatic symptoms. But be on the lookout for somatic complaints that don't kind of pan out, where the pediatrician cannot find a true medical cause. and look for impairment. I think it's very important that parents look to see how distressed their child is and what kind of impairment ensues. Is there school underachievement or failure? Are there peer and family relationship problems? Is there substance use, antisocial behavior, or perhaps even high-risk sexual behavior? Look for a child who's so anxious they can't go to school, can't enjoy relationships. Again, look for distress and impairment.
Are there some positive coping methods that parents should teach their children?
Well, it's really important, I think, for parents to model good coping skills when they themselves are anxious. How does the parent respond to stress? Does the parent drink alcohol a lot? Does the parent smoke? Is the parent irritable? Does he or she withdraw? Because kids often look at their parents and adopt these unhealthy coping mechanisms. So the first point, I think, that's very important is that parents be good role models for their kids with respect to stress, to coping with stress. Of course, it's important for parents to encourage communication, and often on the child's own terms. You can't force this kind of communication. You have to be open and look for windows of opportunity where you can talk with your child. And then lifestyle modifications such as healthy diet, adequate sleep, and exercise are always very helpful.
Is it normal for teenagers to be moody? Can you talk about what kind of behavior is just having the blues, and what are some signs that there's a problem that needs more attention?
Well, it is normal for teenagers to be moody. We know the hormones of puberty make kids go up and down and can be very trying for parents. But again, if you want to look for a serious problem, you look for impairment, you look for significant distress. And I find that social withdrawal is a real red flag for a serious depression. And you want to look for sustained mood changes. And look if your child can be happy at some point or another. Teens go through ups and downs, but you want to see those ups as well as those downs.
How common is suicide among teenagers, and what are the red flags to watch for?
Suicide is the third leading cause of death in 15 to 19-year-olds after accidents and homicides. And suicidal ideation, thinking about suicide, is actually relatively common among adolescents. According to the most recent surveys, about 14% of kids seriously considered suicide in the year prior to the survey. Girls were more likely to consider than boys, and also more likely to attempt. But unfortunately, boys were more likely to complete suicide. A suicide attempt involves engaging in a behavior that's intended to end one's life. And suicide attempts are less common than suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideation, but they're not rare. And again, this same survey looked at kids and found that 6% or so of high school students had attempted suicide in the year prior to survey.
That sounds really high.
We also see self-inflicted harm. Basically, kids who cut themselves or seem to want to hurt themselves. Now, this is not necessarily suicidal, and it's important for parents to understand that. We might have called these suicidal gestures in the past, but it's really a poor term. We call this now self-injury, and the reasons include providing a kind of emotional release, allowing a teenager who's in distress to feel something. But usually a teen who cuts themselves or hurts themselves like that does not necessarily want to die.
Could we talk about treatment? How important is it to get formal treatment for anxiety or depression? What does the treatment usually include?
It's very important for children and adolescents to get treatment for mental health disorders. But treatment does not necessarily mean going into formal counseling or taking medications right away, because there are first steps. You might want to access your pediatrician who can do some psychoeducation. That's a form of treatment. Sometimes just a few sessions by a pediatrician can be critical in helping a teenager and parent feel better. And also for many teens, admitting to a parent how he or she feels, just coming out about these mental health problems can be really helpful, just coming out and talking about it. School counselors and social workers can often be very helpful with supportive counseling for kids who are having mental health problems. But if a parent or pediatrician is concerned, it makes sense to access more formal counseling, such as using a psychologist or psychiatrist. And sometimes medications can really turn things around. They're usually best in adolescence if combined with counseling. That's important to know.
Are antidepressants safe for adolescents?
Yes, antidepressants are safe. There are two currently that are FDA approved, but they need to be used judiciously and ideally combined with counseling.
What advice do you give parents who are struggling to find a mental health professional who can help treat their child?
This can be a challenge depending on where the family lives and what services are accessible in their neighborhood. If you do have insurance, look at your plan, see who is covered. And often the insurance plans have a list of mental health professionals that families can access. There's also the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, which has a website that can locate providers by zip code near where a family lives. And it's important to understand that a family does not necessarily need to first access a psychiatrist or a psychologist, because there are other types of professionals like social workers who can offer support and counseling. And of course, the pediatrician is a wonderful resource. You should ask your pediatrician for advice and referral if necessary.
Doctor, is there anything else you would like to add on this topic?
I think it's very important that pediatricians, families, all be aware that mental health problems do exist in children and adolescents, and to be open to having discussions about this and seeking help.